Today is Rosh Chodesh Adar, still. Happy Adar. Go joy. And, it's a happy day. I talked about that, yeah.
What day does it last?
What, Adar?
Yeah, in terms of English, the English day.
Well, it's about a month from now, so today's February 25th.
Well,
Tomorrow. So usually third week of March is Adar, and then beginning of Nisan starts the third week of March, a couple weeks before Passover.
So today is the new moon.
Yeah.
Passover is the full moon, so it's like a month and a half.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just one day. So.
Anyway.
How much time you
have? That's right.
To get ready.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about today is the big miracle. Which is the walls of Jericho come tumbling down.
Oh, I love that.
You love that. If you want, you can all sing the song.
Yeah.
So it's chapter 6.
Please.
I want you to look here in page 26 in your art scroll, chapter 6. All right. So I really want to highlight a couple of things. We're all generally familiar with the story. But I want to point out a number of ideas that I think are important to kind of stand out. Okay, so let's read through it, and then I'll stop as we go. Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua, God says to Yoshua, Re'ei natati biyadchat Yericho, that I'm giving you Yericho, ve'ed malka gibore hachayo. And he says, I didn't read the first pasuk. V'yericho soger d'musugar b'nei b'dei Yisrael. Yericho was completely sealed before the children of Israel. Nobody left and nobody entered. So basically, it was like a siege on the city. Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua, and God says to Yoshua, Re'ei natati v'yadchat Yericho ve'et malka gibore hachayo. I have delivered into your hand Yericho, its king, and the mighty warriors. And then, and this is just important to reflect on for a minute, as opposed to God saying to Yehoshua, just go in, and this is the beginning of the conquest of the land of Israel, he creates this whole scenario. I mean, the question we're going to just analyze a little bit today is, why this whole process for the conquest of Yericho? A normal battle would be, again, just like, go in, fight, and be victorious. But why this whole process? What is this process? And he says, what do you do? V'sako sabotem et ha'ir kol anshei milchama, hakif et ha'ir pam achat ko taseh sheyamim. You shall go around the city, all the men of war, encircling the city one time, and then you should do this for a period of 6 days. So walk around the city. And 7 kohanim shall carry 7 ram shofars before the ark. Again, we'll talk about this, the notion of 7. On the 7th day, you shall go around the city 7 times, and the kohanim shall blow with the shofars. Now, from this pasuk, they walked around the city, he told them. Were they supposed to make any noise while they walked around the city? No. I mean, it seems that the only noise, they only make noise when? On the seventh day. It shall be that on the extended blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the shofar, all the people shall cry out with a great cry. Meaning, again, the implication is that it's 7 days of encircling, 6 days in silence. Just imagine kind of like what this looks like. You know, you're holed up inside. I can see this like in a movie, and nobody's saying a word. It's like this foreign nation walks around. And then on the 7th day, shofar, and this great cry. I mean, Susan's getting nervous just listening to this right now.
Wait, this is amazing. Great movie.
It is a great movie. Okay. Wait, Lloyd, before you go weiter, before you, hold on 1 second. Let's see, Yiddish is such a part of me. And all people shall cry, all the people shall cry out with a great cry, and the wall of the city will drop down. It's a miracle. Psh, the walls just come tumbling down, and the people shall advance, each man straight ahead.
Only it were so easy.
Only, what do you want to say, Lloyd?
I think it was an important message that Hashem was giving to the land. Is that
to the land?
All the city states.
Yep.
This is an important message that we are going to instill fear that I can conquer anybody and anything. And since Jericho was number one on the list, he established his presence. He established that the Jewish people will be victorious, and better pay heed to it, because we will conquer you all. And this is the message I think he sends out to everybody. This is number
I think
one.
Your point is actually 2 points you're making, which are definitely want to amplify a little bit, that really the concept of walking around like this, it was psychological warfare. I mean, there's no question that this was the first battle, and God wanted the Jewish people to instill the sense of trepidation and fear. The way Rabbi Hatton quotes this in his article, he says, the method of encirclement here constitutes a powerful source of psychological warfare against the inhabitants of the city, who will watch with alarm as the Israelites file by silently, led by their God and preceded by the shrill sound of the ram's horns. And if you look, actually, he quotes here, hold on 1 second. A minute, hold on. Yeah, so I want you to look at the Radak here. It's on page 6. The first wide line and the last line, Batam Hahakafa. You see it all the way on the left side? Batam Hahakafa, the reason for the encirclement, Betrua, with the shofar. Do you see where I am, you guys?
No.
So it's right here. It's this the big wide line in the Radak. The first word in line is Betrua, right? V'tama kafa betrua, with a noise, l'havhil ha'am, to confuse the nation, asher betoch ha'ir, that's in the midst of the city, v'tipol ha'choma tachteha, and then the wall will fall, l'man yed'u, this is the key, so people will know, kol amei ha'aretz, all the nations, ki Hashem nilcham li'Yisrael. That was the other point. It wasn't just psychological warfare, but it was to create this impression that God is behind this conquest. Because if Jericho would have just been, okay, the Jews are going to go in and fight like a conventional warfare battle, they might have still won. But people might have said, well, you know, it's this mighty nation of Israel. But the fact that it was done in such a dramatic way was there to make it very clear that there was a higher power that was behind them. Toby, yes.
Isn't this in part, though, to convince the Jewish people as well? I feel like it's a little bit like the plagues, where it was as much
very
about
good.
Convincing the Jews as it was about convincing, right?
100%. It was both. It was both, because as we'll see, this awareness and this recognition that, you know, God was always with them was something that the people struggled with for a very long time. I mean, you know, clearly we're going to see also that that's one of the reasons why when they do battle, Yeshua says you can't take any spoils. No spoils. Because this is not your victory. This is God's victory. And that's why God wanted to make sure that they had absolutely no personal benefit. The goal here was to establish the land of Israel as a place for them to establish a sovereignty, but not for their own glory and not for their own acquisition, but it had to be with a constant awareness that God was driving it. So as Toby was saying, it wasn't just that the nations would know, but that the Jewish people will be aware that this is kind of a holy mission they were on. And they don't have any right to take any of the bounty. This isn't for them.
I mean, it's interesting, too, because do you remember any other battle particularly? But everybody remembers the walls of Jericho. That's an amazing difference.
It's true. Right. Well, it's awesome. What was that?
Yeah, they made a song about it. Yeah.
Who made the song?
I learned about it in Hebrew school.
Yeah, everybody knows that story.
That's right, everybody knows that story.
So, it's a movie or a TV?
Well, it's probably both, but
I know neither.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing, let's go a little further here, verse number 6. Yoshua the son of Nun summoned the Kohanim and said to them, carry the Ark of the Covenant, and 7 Kohanim shall carry 7 ram shofars before the Ark of Hashem. He said to the people, advance and go around the city, let the armed troop pass before the Ark of Hashem. Okay, again, let's go a little further.
Was it the whole nation or... who actually marched?
It looks like just the men.
Just like the
just
the
what?
Soldiers. The soldiers.
Like just the
soldiers.
That
yeah.
Fight.
Yeah.
Men of fighting.
Yeah. And then it says in the pasuk. I just want to look at one thing here for a minute. Hold on. So it's actually go a little further. I want to draw you to a Rashi here a minute. But pasuk chet. Vehi kasher Yeshua. Kemor Yeshua el ha'am v'shiva konim nasim shiva shofar ha'yovlim v'fnei Hashem avru v'taku b'shofrot. They advanced and they blew with the shofars. The Ark and the Covenant went before them. Ha'olich achrehem. V'ha'chalutz and the armed troop, chalutzim, that's an important word. Chalutzim are the pioneers. The pioneers were the first ones that went. Ha'olich l'fnei ha'konim. They went before the konim. Tiku ha'shofrot v'ha'ma'aseif. And the rear guard, so it was some tribes went in the front as the pioneers, then the Kohanim, then there was the Ma'aseif, that's the caboose. The rear guard went, Holech, Acharei Aron, Haloch, V'tekoa, B'Shofrot. So it was done, by the way, very specifically. What's interesting is what Rashi says over here. Look at Rashi on HaChalutz. Who are the Chalutzim? It's on page 26 on the right side in the Rashi. B'HaChalutz, B'nai Reuven u B'nai Gad. Mm-hmm. B'nai Reuven and Gad, they had to go in the forefront. Anybody know why?
They were the ones who weren't
going to
cross over.
They were the ones who weren't going to end up living in Israel. And when they said, we want to stay on the other side of the Jordan, remember Moshe said to them, if you stay on the other side, you got to be the first ones to fight. So nobody could ever say that you weren't willing to put your life on the line. And this is practically speaking where it comes true. This is their first battle. And he says, you guys, I know you're going to be living in America, but right now you guys got to go in the forefront, the chalutzim. That's really important. Ha'ivin lifnei lefishai b'nei gad giborim, and also they happen to be apparently great warriors, umakim b'zra chazaka. Then, look at the Metsudat Zion. Who is the rear guard? Who went last? So look at Metsudat Zion. It's on the left side. Ama'aseif. Degel. What did you say?
Students?
No. That was from the tribe of Dan. The tribe of Dan. Nikra Masef. Al Shum Shahalchu Ba'achrona. Vahayu Ma'afsvim. They would walk last. Hayu Ma'afsvim Koha Nichshalim. Me'a Machanot Shahalchu Rishonim. They were the ones, apparently, who would round up any Israelites who fell behind. This is interesting.
Why don't them?
Apparently, they were tasked with, I mean, if you can imagine, there were 3 million people traveling throughout the desert. So he quotes actually here, it's interesting, in Bamidbar, I'll just look at this, chapter 10, you know, they didn't travel in chaos. It's not like all of a sudden, okay, go! There was a whole plan and a whole structure as to how the Jewish people traveled in the desert. So he's quoting here, he says, if you look in Bamidbar, chapter 10, verse 25, where it talks about the way that they traveled, it says here, yeah, so it goes through the traveling, and the last tribe to be described in the travel is the tribe of Dan, and literally it says in the Torah, I never would have noticed this, how is Dan described? Degel machane b'nei Dan ma'aseif l'chol machanot. They were the ones who gathered any stragglers. I didn't even know that. The tribe of Dan were the ones you had to have, because if you're going, this happens when you're chaperones, who's going to go in the front? And who's going to be the one to watch the slow ones on the back? The tribe of Dan was responsible.
Why them?
Why them? Now you're going deep on me. Why was that tribe designated?
I mean, they were given a certain
what
designation by Jacob, right?
Yeah. Well, it's actually interesting. So Rashi here quotes in Bamidbar, why is Dan? So the Rashi quotes a Gemara. It says that Dan was the most populous of the tribes. Yeah. Haya, and therefore they traveled last. V'chol mishaya ma'abei davar, haya machziro lo. And anybody who lost anything, they would give it back to them. I guess it was easiest for them to travel in the back because they were the biggest. But also as a result of that, they became the tribe, you know, that would kind of make sure that nobody kind of got left behind.
No, but when Jacob gave each tribe a blessing, or What was there?
Ah, so there, that's interesting. The blessing, you know it by heart?
So, Shimshon, right?
Well, Shimshon comes from Dan, yeah. But I'm just interesting when I see what the bracha is for Dan. I'm just going to look this up for a minute. Well, Dan will avenge his people. It's actually referring to Shimshon. The tribes of Israel will be united as one. So he actually describes it here. Hold on. This is verse 16. Yaakov alluded prophetically to Dan's descendant Shimshon, who single-handedly fought and defeated the Philistines, and in his time he brought unity to the people. He's also unique among the tribes, meaning that Shimshon will be like David, a member of Yehuda. It's actually interesting also that Dan is considered in the pecking order, if there is. They were considered kind of, I don't know, the lowliest of the tribes is the wrong word for it, but this point is made when it came to the construction of the Mishkan, which we're actually going to be we're reading about, that there were two main architects of the Mishkan. One was Bezalel, and who was the second one?
It was Aholiav
from the tribe of Dan. And the Medrash says, why did God choose these two architects? Because he wanted to choose an architect from the tribe of Yehuda, which were considered the leaders, and he also wanted to choose an architect from the tribe of Dan. This makes a lot of sense. Which was in the back. The one that people may have felt was kind of the not the most significant. You know, they traveled. They were the guys who traveled in the back. Now, there may have been rational reasons why they traveled in the back, because they were the most populous. But people might have thought, well, they're hanging out in the back.
Rov Ha'am
Hadras Melech, which is that you should do things in a large group, because the more people that come together, it's considered a greater honor to God when you bring people together.
Right, so Don is like the...
Well, it's interesting. You're right. That's interesting.
Grassroots.
Yeah. And that's kind of why God is saying, like...
The common man.
Yeah, the common man. And that's exactly what the Medrash says. Like, okay, it's logical. You're going to get the architect from the Mishkan from Yehuda. But I want you to know, the other architect is going to be from this tribe. Don't neglect this tribe. Even though they're traveling in the back and they're the most populous, the second guy is going to be from the tribe of Dan, so nobody would in any way minimize any of the tribes.
If you don't have the support of the people, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you need the support of the people. That's true. And you make sure that in your leadership role, you take people that kind of reflect the different demographics a little bit so that people feel they're stakeholders. You're not going to have 12 architects, but if you're going to choose two, get one from the leadership tribe and one from the tribe that's most populous that people may not be paying attention to. Go ahead.
Wasn't the pecking order established at Sinai? The tribes were set up in a certain circle with respect to the Mishkan.
Well, it's actually interesting. They all were. There were four camps. Each one had three. It wasn't like any. The only one who was in the center was the tribe of Levi.
Right.
The others did have kind of equal access to the Mishkan. It was not in a row, but they were encircling it. So they did have equal access. That's why I hate to use the word, it's not really pecking order, but it's more the perception of people would be, well, someone's got to travel in the back, and Don traveled in the back. And that's exactly the point.
Who their mothers were. Don is who?
That's true. Who's Don's mother?
Bilhah.
It might be, actually. So there might have been something there also. Though,
like if they were from Rachel and Leah, they were already considered, you know, higher up.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great name for Capital Campaign 2.0, the Don Campaign.
The Don Campaign. just one last point, and then I'm going to... We'll pick this up next... Well, I'll pick this up actually in 2 weeks, because next week is APAC.
Oh.
I'm in D.C. But the other point is... I'm going to say to you, the other point is that's why when it came to the Battle of Yericho, it was important that he got the Chalutzim, and also Dan was involved. It was another affirmation of Jewish unity. I just want to conclude with this point. So he says that the fact that he took representatives of the Chalutzim and the tribe of Dan in this first and pivotal battle constitutes a microcosm of the people and their God united in purpose and bonded by a common destiny. As knowledgeable readers, we all know that as the campaign to secure the land progresses and other Canaanite cities fall, some tribes will suffer from the sore temptation to abandon the more comprehensive national concerns in pursuit of their own sectarian interests. For this very reason, the attack on Yericho is carried out in a manner that emphasizes the overriding importance of maintaining national cohesiveness in the face of the common threat. So that's why you have the Chalutzim, who aren't even going to live there, but they're leading. And you have the tribe of Dan, who also has this pivotal role in the first conquest. We'll pause here.